A healthcare system without nurses or nursing care is unimaginable, but there are serious challenges facing the profession today in the U.S. and globally. Nursing shortages usually grab the headlines, but that cannot be separated from key questions such as what's the best way to unleash the full force of nursing skills into healthcare delivery to improve patient health, reduce harm, and improve quality at lower costs? And how do we prepare future nurses so they possess these skills? On today's WIHI, we're going to get a firsthand glimpse of what a special committee of the Institute of Medicine is exploring about nursing and what may be in store based on recommendations that will eventually be made and based on work already underway to redesign care. Welcome, everyone, to WIHI. That's an audio discussion with EDGE, as in cutting edge, from the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. My name is Madge Kaplan. I'm Director of Communications at IHI, and I host and produce this program. We've got about 850 of you and counting getting on to the show. We welcome all of you. 2,600 of you signed up for this free program. And I mention that because that is a tremendous outpouring of interest, and as if we needed another reminder about the importance of nursing and nurses and what we'll be discussing on this edition of WIHI. My guests today are Dr. Donna Shalala, Susan Hassmiller, and Pat Rutherford. There are longer, more complete bios for each of these individuals on the IHI.org website, but in brief, Dr. Donna Shalala is an accomplished scholar, teacher, administrator, and public servant. She's been president of the University of Miami since 2001, following her tenure as the longest-serving U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services from 1993 to 2001. A 2008 recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, Dr. Shalala was appointed chair of the Institute of Medicine and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Initiative on the Future of Nursing in America in 2009. Welcome, Dr. Shalala. Susan Hassmiller is the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's Senior Advisor for Nursing, where she is shaping and leading the foundation's strategies to address the nurse and nursing faculty shortages in an effort to create a higher quality of patient care in the United States. She is also the Director of the Robert Wood Johnson Initiative on the Future of Nursing at the IOM. Hassmiller is a fellow in the American Academy of Nursing and a member of the Joint Commission National Nurse Advisory Council and the New York Academy of Medicine. Welcome, Sue.
And thank you so much.
Okay, great. And Pat Rutherford, she's here with me in the studio. She is an IHI Vice President responsible for, here we go, managing IHI's clinical office practice redesign, improving access and flow in specialty practices and outpatient settings, optimizing care coordination and transition in care, innovations in patient-centered care, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and IHI project Transforming Care at the Bedside. Prior to joining IHI, Pat worked for 21 years at Children's Hospital in Boston. So welcome, Pat. About 1,100 of you have now gotten on board with us today, and we want to welcome each and every one of you. This could be the start of many such programs. So Dr. Shalala, I'd like to start with you, and what I'm going to ask, I'm going to kind of go around the horn here with Dr. Shalala, Sue, and Pat, and just get some kind of, first, some headlines. There have been no shortage of analyses and reports on challenges for nursing in the United States, and there have also been many strategies and recommendations that have been put forth. So I'd love if you could tell us what is important and unique about this effort that's now underway at the Institute of Medicine. And welcome again to WIHI.
Thank you very much. First, we're doing this report in the context of healthcare reform. I think that most of us believe that we're going to get a bill. And we really cannot reform the healthcare system. We can't expand it, including coverage for everyone, without nurses at the center of that discussion and at the center of the delivery of care. We've long known that it takes a team to produce quality care, that nursing needs to be able to practice to its scope, to what it's trained to do. And this new challenge in the context of healthcare reform, with millions of Americans coming directly into hopefully the right parts of the healthcare system, demands nurses of the highest quality and many more than we currently have.
Sue, thank you. Just this week, one aspect of what's going on, and we'll come back to Dr. Shalala to learn a little bit more about the objectives of the initiative. Sue, just this past week, you held another sort of interesting regional meeting where people have been invited to testify. This one was in Los Angeles, and IHI's own Maureen Bisignano gave some testimony. I'm curious, given how deep your knowledge is of what's going on with nursing, what are you learning at these hearings that's new, or does it tend to kind of confirm what you already know?
Well, Madge, I think it depends on who you are. Many people know of the following bullets that I'll express to you, but here at the Future of Nursing, I think we're bringing it all together so people hear it more in a coherent fashion. We heard from Dr. Marilyn Chow of Kaiser Permanente, for example, that only 25% of a nurse's time is spent at the bedside, and that's a national study that Robert Wood Johnson Foundation funded. Not many people know that, and that's a pretty scary fact. We also heard from Dr. Alan Rosenstein, who is the chief medical officer of VHA West Coast, that disruptive behavior in the workplace is very, very prevalent and leads to stressful and unsafe working conditions. And we also know from our own 10-year nursing cohort study that there is a lot of stress and disruptive behaviors that are being reported from our new graduates cohort as well. We also heard from Steve DeMello and Pam Cipriano at UVA that nurses, in order for technology to be implemented most effectively, that nurses need to be in that basic decision-making level. So, you know, you don't have technology run amok when it finally is implemented. And then finally, from your COO, as you mentioned, Maureen Bisignano, she told us that every single frontline nurse must have training in quality improvement to ensure that the majority of their day is spent on direct patient care. And to prove that point further, Maureen said that nurses should really have a bigger voice in boardrooms of those organizations that are overseeing the quality agenda in our country, because nurses know a lot about quality and safety.
Okay, thanks, Sue. Those are really great takeaways for all of us. And just a reminder, every program, we have a really nice list of resources that we compile that Vicki Minden does of all kinds of links, and including for this program to the Future of Nursing Initiative, where you can, once you register, watch actually the most recent hearing and previous ones, as well as download some relevant materials for more details. Sue, just before I move on to Pat here, I want to make sure that maybe everyone is clear on this. When you say disruptive behavior that's being reported, what are you referring to?
Dr. Rosenstein talked about two kinds of disruptive behavior, those between physicians to nurses, and then nurses to nurses, and those below nurses. And that's anything from making very demeaning remarks to actually yelling because things aren't done fast enough. So that's what I'm talking about,
okay.
Disruptive behavior. And he really made the point that these kinds of behaviors are leading to errors.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Maybe we'll get back to that. I appreciate that. Thanks, Sue. Pat Rutherford, get you in here now. You are no stranger to working in all of these areas with Sue Hassmiller, with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, with TCAB. I'm wondering, how do you feel that this kind of big picture assessment that's now being rolled out around the country and hopes to come up with some genuine, important recommendations, how does that help a lot of the work that you've been doing?
Well, I think there's three key principles or headlines that I would emphasize. I think the first, both Sue and Dr. Shalala have mentioned, creating an optimal work environment for professional nurses in all care settings. Sue mentioned the time and motion studies that have shown that on average, nurses, particularly in medical and surgical units, spend 25 to 30% of their time in direct care with patients. And we know that there are a lot of work inefficiencies and waste in what nurses are doing, looking for equipment, duplicative documentation, and communications and hunting and gathering. So we know that In terms of the work environment, creating a better work environment to really optimize the time that nurses spend with patients and families, I think is one key principle, as well as the cultural, the culture within the settings, whether it be an office practice, a skilled nursing facility, or a hospital, are really critically important to really optimize the contributions of nursing. Second, I think that there are a lot of really innovative models that show better clinical outcomes and at the same time better work environments for nurses and interdisciplinary collaboration. And I think we need to create them, harvest them, and really get the good word out and help others to learn from each other and to spread these best models and best practices. And last, I think that nurses can play a key role in healthcare reform. I think that key in what's before us is improving the quality for patients and families and at the same time reducing cost. And there are many innovative models, particularly I think in the area of primary care, expanding the scope of nursing in terms of primary care, home care, and transitional care models or navigators. And secondly, in coordination of care. The medical home, the patient-centered medical home, one of the key changes or enhancements in primary care is the role of nursing and nurse practitioners in primary care. And those are two key areas that I think will help the healthcare system a great deal.
Okay. Dr. Shalala, back to you. One of the things Pat mentioned here, certainly kind of some key things we're all thinking about right now, primary care, but also how are we going to get the word out about best models and innovation that's already been going on. Does that line up with the objectives for the initiative that you're engaged with? And maybe you could also tell us what are the main objectives of this initiative.
It certainly does line up. We need to talk about nursing as an integral part of the teams that are going to deliver primary care. There's been a lot of discussion about we need more primary care docs. The fact is we need to reorganize primary care, and nursing needs to be at the center of that reorganization. I certainly am convinced that we can create a seamless system if we allow nurses to do what they've been trained to do, and if we see them as an integral member of the teams. We've lost so many nurses to other professions, in part because we didn't make the job good enough or challenging enough or provide enough leadership opportunities. I believe healthcare reform is an extraordinary opportunity for nursing and, more than anything else, for high-quality patient care.
Dr. Shalala, do you feel that that is a shared sense out there with what's going on in Washington, that nursing is integral to the success of healthcare reform? And is part of what you and Sue and what the Future of Nursing Initiative trying to do is make sure people don't miss the boat on that one?
Well, of course. We're going to provide a very clear pathway for that. What you always want to do is to remind people of what the cutting-edge experience is and what the opportunities are. That's the challenge of this IOM Robert Wood Johnson report. The president gets it, and certainly the leadership of Congress get it. All of this will be in the implementation with the hope that As healthcare plans, insurance companies, hospitals look at what they need to do to get the quality of care, the coverage, and as CMS lays out their rules, they'll capture the important role of nursing in our future.
Okay. Pat, just a quick thing, and then go back to Sue. Nurse practitioners here in Massachusetts recently won a kind of state-sanctioned status, and I did not get, maybe others who are with us today know how many states might share in that, which they are recognized as primary care providers, and you can choose them if you get on board a health plan, and health plans have to make sure you know that. Is that a step in the right direction?
Absolutely. I think the increasing the scope of nursing within traditional roles and expanded roles, I think, is critical. I think nurse practitioners, I think Mary Naylor's model where advanced practice nurses really help in the transitional care after an acute care hospitalization is an absolutely innovative model that clearly has demonstrated better clinical outcomes for at-risk patients at the same time saving costs. So I think there are a lot of good models, and I think that we need to look at the scope of practice in the different states and see if we can accelerate that expansion.
Okay. So who would you hope is influenced by the work that you've got underway right now?
Well, we are trying to, as we hold our national forums and open up our committees with some of the sessions, we hope to influence many people. I always say if nurses could, if this could be solved, well, if nurses could do it, it would have been solved already. And that's why we need to influence many other people, government officials, those on Capitol Hill, those in academia, corporate America as well. We're really trying to position this as a societal issue, just like we parents believe that it's so important to have the best teachers for our children. We should also care about the best nurses for ourselves and our family members.
Okay. So depending on, you know, what day of the week it is, in terms of sort of sometimes how the lay press treats things, sort of the outside looking in, you know, people aren't sure, you know, which thing is the most serious. Is the nurse, is there a shortage or how serious is the shortage? Now students can't get into programs because there aren't enough faculty. And then we continue to, of course, have to deal with issues about whether people are fully prepared for the ever more complex healthcare environment. Do you think that this IOM endeavor can kind of help us sort that out and maybe help connect the dots so we're sort of less kind of just moving from one sort of what we might think of as a chronic crisis to another?
Well, I hope so. You started your question by saying, depending upon the day of week, what might be most important.
Are you optimistic and, today?
Yeah. So I think there are a couple of things that are important. I would certainly echo Donna Shalala and Pat Rutherford's comment about expanding the scope of practice for nurse, not only nurse practitioners, but certified nurse midwives. Like other countries do, they have excellent outcomes, not only in this country, but in other countries, and I think we should expand their scope of practice universally. I think we also need to pay a great deal of attention to the faculty shortage, because that's really the bottleneck that is prohibiting students from coming into nursing school in the first place. Over 41,000 students, a conservative number, were turned away. Qualified applicants were turned away last year because there simply weren't enough faculty members. And faculty need to be much smarter, about, you know, what they're teaching based on our aging demographics. We need to increase training in geriatrics, and we need to put a lot more in our curriculums about safety and quality. We've been told that time and again, and we just really need to do it. One of your board members, Madge, Dr. Linda Cronenwet, has worked on a standardized curriculum for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation on doing just that, putting a standardized curriculum in place on quality and safety. And then finally, as again, Maureen Bizignano pointed out in her remarks at the LA Forum, I think that nurses need to be given a voice in regard to how they think the system should be redesigned. They have a lot of good ideas, and they have a lot of good things to add.
Okay. This is Donna. If I might
go ahead
in a little on Sue's usually and always wise words. The training slots for nurses, it's not just faculty members for the classroom or even in the simulations. The hospitals are going to, and other settings, are going to have to step up, because our the way in which we educate nurses in this country is to actually put them into a situation with someone supervising them in a hospital or in another kind of setting. And we need those to open up, and often the private hospitals are too busy to open up those slots. And many nursing schools are hamstrung at the end of training in finding those openings as opposed to what they need to do in the classroom. Isn't that right, Sue?
That's absolutely right. It's the number of faculty, and it's the lack of clinical space, too. And I just want to add, One of the best decisions that we have made, listening again to Donna Shalala on this phone call, one of the best decisions we've made is to invite her to be the chair of this committee.
All right. Shout out.
I'm sort of a novice. I learn from all of them as I go along, but also from the nursing deans I've worked with over the years and in higher education, because they've taught me a lot about the nature of education, about the challenges. But, you know, I just came back from the University of Miami Hospital, and I spent some time just standing around talking to the nurses and listening to what they think their challenges are.
Well, I think no one would argue that we need some really clear-eyed and wise, you know, views right now and ability to maybe pull a lot of different strands together. I want to ask Pat a quick question, and then we're going to open it up for chat, although some people are already off and running on the chat, and we'll get to some of your comments. But, Pat, you and I have talked a lot about sort of innovation of all sorts, but including in the education and teaching environment and different ways that we might even deal with the current situation.
Well, I was struck. I listened. I wasn't in LA for the meeting on Monday, but I did listen in via teleconference and webinar, and I was really struck by the student nurse who was on the reactor panel. And she spoke about the importance, reemphasized the importance of mentorship by experienced nurses in the clinical setting. So I think that, you know, we may want to think about bringing education and clinical practice a little closer together. So nurses that are working in advanced practice roles within outpatient settings or home care, as well as within acute care settings, that the med-surg units and ICUs and other clinical settings. I think bringing those two worlds together and perhaps having some of the clinical nurse specialists and others mentor students as well. I also think that a crisis such as the faculty shortage may call for some innovation. So one thought would be, how can we leverage the expertise of perhaps the best clinical faculty in the country around cardiovascular care? Could they, you know, create a webinars or podcasts or some kind of electronic versions of their lectures? Could that be made available to schools of nursing throughout the country? And then put all of our attention on creating, you know, clinical instructors and clinical faculty that could really help then put that into practice. So I think some looking at some innovative models, I think, might be helpful. Also, in transforming care at the bedside, with Sue's vision, also we had School of Nursing faculty that were part of this initiative with all of our original 13 hospitals that were part of Transforming Care at the Bedside. And in that, the clinical folks in clinical practice, at the same time, the clinical faculty were learning together and redesigning care together. So many of these schools of nursing now have adopted the redesigned principles of Transforming Care at the Bedside, and I think that both are now in concert, so that once these nurses are prepared from their education, then they can enter into practice with these new principles and advanced care.
Okay, thanks, Pat. Well, it is really amazing already. Let me just tell people there are about 1,460 of you on and chatting away. And as often happens, you may or may not need us to carry on this conversation, but we're going to somehow yank you in here and start rolling with the chat. Again, it's WIHI. I'm Madge Kaplan, the host and producer, and I've got Dr. Donna Shalala with me, Pat Rutherford in the studio, and Sue Hassmiller, an illustrious crew. I want to just ask Pamela Robinson here. I hope she doesn't mind. I'm naming her. She says, are we really addressing the core issues? And I'd love Pamela to tell us what she thinks some of those core issues might be, particularly if she's not sure we are addressing them. I think that's kind of in the spirit of even what the Future of Nursing Initiative is trying to get underway. We had Jonathan Small, who's here in this studio with us, helping out also on chat, and he drew out this question: what's the business model for keeping nurses in the profession and at the bedside? Any one of you, maybe I'll go back to you, Dr. Shalala, do you feel that you have to make some strong economic arguments to maybe kind of get some people's attention and win over some support?
Well, I think it's dangerous to make an argument, particularly in our report, that if you introduce nurses, for example, into primary care, you'll save money. I'd rather argue that if you introduce nurses and their patient-centered approach into primary care, that will improve the quality and the scope of primary care. and our ability to sort of stretch everybody out the way they've been trained. So I think Sue and I have talked about this, about the danger of suggesting nurses substituting for someone because they're cheaper. That's exactly the wrong argument we want to make. We want to hold on to quality. Don't you think so, Sue?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. In TCAB, though, I guess, Pat, certainly sort of being able to kind of demonstrate what it means to sort of have nurses spending more time at the bedside and working to their capacity instead of wasting time, there is a cost figure in there, and I don't think in any way it sort of knocks nursing at all, right?
Well, I think TCAB, Transforming Care at the Bedside, is an initiative that was originated on medical and surgical units. And as a system of care, any one particular change has an effect on others. So, for example, if today a nurse is spending approximately 25% of his or her time in direct patient care, if we can get rid of and improve the inefficient processes of care and get nurses devoting more time in care, I believe that those nurses can then reinvest their time in things that they don't have time to do right now. We know that the reason nurses went into nursing is so that they can spend time and help improve the outcomes for patients and families. Patient teaching, patient education, emotional support, decisions about care decisions, end-of-life decisions, many very important critical decisions come out of a dialogue that happens over a trusting relationship. So what we believe is not any one component of transforming care at the bedside should be looked at in isolation, because what we're trying to do is not to reduce the number of nurses, but what we're trying to do is optimize their contributions by getting rid of the wasteful things, stewarding the resources that are in the nursing care model now, and reinvest their times in things that matter to patients and families. And we know from Linda Aiken's work and many others that that time in direct care and that time with patients does improve the quality outcomes, which is in itself is a quality and cost-saving outcome in some circumstances.
Okay, very good.
And I'd like to add to
Go
what,
ahead, Sue.
I'd like to add to what Pat is saying. The question was, is there a business model for keeping people at the bedside? Well, that definitely speaks to retention. And as any CNO and any CEO and CFO would tell you, it's extraordinarily expensive to for that leakage in the hospital, not only in the hospital setting, but in the outpatient setting. We're fond of talking about acute care, but there are excruciating shortages in the community as well. But every time a nurse leaves, it takes her salary, and I say her because most nurses are women, but it takes her salary plus another half the salary to make up for recruiting an additional nurse and all the training that goes on in bringing that new nurse up to speed. So it's very, very expensive to lose nurses.
Carolee Besteman is saying here, thanks, Sue. Let's also move beyond nursing and hospitals. In today's setting, many nurses are needed in other places, outpatient, health centers, case management, supervising medical assistants. I guess it really is the whole ball of wax, which is why I'm in awe of the undertaking that you and Dr. Shalala are kind of undertaking here. Do you feel that, you know, do we have a problem here that when we say nurses, we continue to say nurses equal hospitals? Sue or Dr. Shalala?
Yes, absolutely. And we're going to be careful about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say a little more?
We're going to be careful about not equating nurses with hospitals.
Okay.
What are you talking to a variety of settings?
Right. Well, and I would add, this is Pat, that I think some of the most impressive innovative care models are now coming in community health care. So there's the Eric Coleman's coaching model. There's the Mary Naylor's transitional care model that I described before. There's the care coordination role for nurses and nurse practitioners in innovative models of primary care. Evercare is a phenomenally interesting and I think powerful model where elders or geriatric patients or geriatric individuals in that span of life, what they go from one level of care depending on their care needs, and they stay. It's basically like it's an innovative primary care model, frankly, where the nurse practitioners really manage their care and move them to a higher level of care with greater intervention from the nurse practitioners. And I think that in looking at health outcomes in other countries, we find that nursing plays a key role in home care and providing actually primary care services through district nurses in collaboration with social services in the community. And I think we have a lot to learn from them about innovative models utilizing nurses and primary care services as well.
Okay. A lot of people are raising a lot of the very complex issues about nursing education and preparation and the different ways nurses are educated. This is an ongoing, long time discussion in terms of preparation and the two-year associate's degree, the baccalaureate degree, further preparation, specialization. I don't envy, Sue, you and Dr. Shalala trying to sort this all out. Do you feel that you may come forward with some even clearer recommendations on this point, or is it too early to tell?
I think it's too early, and I wouldn't want to presuppose what the committee might say about this, but I would say on behalf of myself that, the reality of the situation is that up to 70% of all of the nurses working in this country today are community college graduates, and I think what we probably need to do, and we know that baccalaureate nurses, according to Linda Aiken's work, there might be a relationship between the baccalaureate degree and better clinical decision making and so forth. I think what we need to do is find ways, clear ways of ensuring that all of those who have associate degrees can find much easier paths. It's so difficult in this country to go on from the associate degree to the baccalaureate degree. But we need to find clearer and easier paths, get rid of the god-awful paperwork that goes on trying to get these people further education. And that's what I'd have to say about that, but that's my own opinion.
Okay. Sue, just I'll keep you one more second. Somebody said he, Sal, I think it's a he, not sure, apologize if not, attended the LA conference, and there were some innovating uses of nurses that were brought up. He's asking if maybe you could kind of remind us if there were some standout things. I don't know if you have all that at your fingertips, but...
I'll mention two. In regard to education, I think one of the clear innovators these days is something called a dedicated education unit. It's something that Pat sort of alluded to in her comments, and Donna as well, when they were talking about better utilizing practice and education or better pairing them. So a dedicated education unit is a floor in a hospital. Here we are back to acute care again.
Okay.
A floor in a hospital where the nurses on that floor have been specially trained to be mentors and even sometimes faculty substitutes. And so, you're getting the benefits of nurses who are practicing right there. Faculty from the academic setting come in. They can't oversee all of the students, but it's really a win-win for everyone. And then something that Maureen Bisignano mentioned sort of reminded me of, Mary Naylor's transition model, or what I used to do as a public health nurse. Maureen talked about how important it is before a patient goes home. I think she learned about this in England. She talked about a nursing SWAT team, and she talked about a nurse going into the home, and before you release someone who's had a total hip replacement so they don't fall again, going into the home and looking at, are there too many throw rugs around? Can the person get easily to the bathroom? Is there a good way of dispensing medications? So those are just two examples.
Thank you. This is an amazing rundown of issues, and I hope this is of use actually to the IOM committee here in terms of just getting some additional kinds of input. There was a question here for Dr. Shalala. Maybe if you could elaborate on your comment about 70% of nurses being community college prepared. I'm not sure what the clarification sought is there, but maybe you could say a bit more about that.
you know, the last HRSA sample survey.
Okay.
That's a national survey that right. HRSA takes every 4 years. They said around 60% of our nurses are community college educated. What I said was up to 70% of them are. So my clarification would be, if you are in rural areas and areas that don't have easy access to universities, the numbers tend to be higher in terms of associate degrees, nurses in practice.
And, you know, I approach this thinking about it somewhat differently. I'm less interested in what we can do to improve nursing, other than the education of nurses, than I am what can we do to improve the quality and the scope of healthcare in the United States. And then within that, what is the future of nursing? And I personally obviously believe that nursing is critical to get to that, both the coverage and the quality issues. And most of the nursing studies have looked more narrowly at nursing as opposed to looking at improving the quality of healthcare. And I think that's the importance of your organization and of the discussion that we're having today.
Okay. So that's what you're saying a little bit more in terms of the scope of healthcare, because I think that does kind of introduce a new way, and that the minute even, and we could say it today on WIHI, that we start sort of talking about things, we immediately kind of start talking about nursing kinds of solutions. So can you say a little bit more, Dr. Shalala?
Well, I think the point here is what we're all trying to do is to figure out if you have to go out and cover another 47, 48 million Americans, but at the same time, you don't want to just cover them with the current system. You want to improve the system of coverage for everyone and the quality of the outcomes. What is nurses' leadership role there? And what do we know from a lot of demonstrations and different kind of approaches that nursing leadership has provided for us around the country that will actually produce better outcomes and produce what I believe is what nurses, the broad opportunities for nurses for what they've been trained for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Very good. Pat?
Yeah, yes, I would add to that. I think that one good example of that is some of our recent efforts to reduce avoidable rehospitalizations. Nursing plays a pivotal role within the hospital setting to prepare patients for discharge from the hospital back into the community setting, whether they're going home or to a skilled nursing facility. And one of the things that we found is that having the staff within the hospital setting work collaboratively with the providers in the community, the primary care providers, the home care nurses, the nurses and staff within the skilled nursing facilities, providing better transitions in care, really working to improve the transitions in care and the handoffs of clinical information and preparing clinicians in the community for that transition, helps to support the patient and the family caregivers in providing self-care at home. And I think that's one huge opportunity to improve the quality for patients and at the same time reduce costs. And nurses have a critical role in guiding care during those transitions.
Okay, thanks, Pat. Again, a reminder that when you log off today's program, you can download the chat. If you have any problems and you don't succeed in doing so, you can email us at info@ihi.org and we'll be glad to email that chat out to you. Boy, that's a strange photograph of me coming up there on the screen, but what are you going to do, you know? So this is WIHI. That's me, Madge Kaplan, in the purple shirt, talking to Pat Rutherford across from me, the WIHI team, and I've got Sue Hassmiller and Dr. Donna Shalala on the phone. Want to ask each of you if you can just, before, so we don't wait till the very end, let's say you've tuned into WIHI, maybe you weren't quite as aware of this Future of Nursing initiative. How do you get involved in it? How do people kind of, people are sort of expressing themselves here, but we've got a whole interesting group with us. How can people kind of make some of their ideas and views known? Sue or Dr. Shalala?
So let me give you a couple of web addresses And it's really, I have to say, Madge, thank you for saying that. It is really our hope that we can engage as many people in this issue around the country as possible. That's why we're having this national forum. Our next one is in Philly, and it's around care in the community. And then our final one is on nursing education in Houston. That'll be in February. But let me give you the web addresses. The one at the IOM is www.iom.edu/nursing.
All right, and people, Sue, I'm only going to interrupt just so people don't get worried about it. Vicki Minden here has got them all down here, and they'll be in the resource things, and Jesse will try and follow along with you. But go ahead, yeah.
Great, iom.edu/nursing, and then we have a separate one at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, all one word, thefutureofnursing.org.
Okay. That's great. So that's one way. And you've got a bunch of additional meetings coming up. Is that right? That's part of what's going on this first year?
We sure do. We're going to be going to Texas, and we're going to be going to Philadelphia. So anyone in those areas, if they get on that website, it'll tell them what to do.
All right. I guess I want to ask a kind of practical. We have a saying around here, what can you do by next Tuesday? And I do think that the people who have joined us today, I'm sure they are looking at the big picture and know that these issues don't get solved overnight. But I'm also wondering if you are interested in sort of how you can begin to kind of look at your environment and sort of start moving in the right direction of either of you. Maybe I'll start with you, Pat. Kind of where are you could sort of begin to kind of dig in terms of beginning to innovate or kind of think hard about what you're doing with your staffing right now.
Okay. There are two what we call how-to guides that have been produced as part of the Transforming Care at the Bedside initiative. One is entitled Engaging Frontline Staff in Innovation and Quality Improvement. And I think that this would be a good primer for folks not only in the acute care setting, that the principles and the how-to part is equally as applicable in home care, in office practice settings, skilled nursing facilities, any particular clinical care setting. And I think this would give people ideas on how that you can get frontline staff, nurses, and the entire team involved in coming up with solutions to chronic problems. And there's success stories in there and resources as well. And secondly, to look at the another how-to guide called Increasing Direct Time in Direct Care. And so this gives nurses and frontline staff skills of observing where the waste and inefficiencies are in their current processes and some basic skills and ideas about how to go about improving those processes. Again, it's acute care setting, but the principles would be applicable in any clinical setting.
Okay. Somebody here, Cynthia, mentioned green nursing. This must be just kind of her bullets here. Green nursing, public health, and integrative models. Green nursing sounds really intriguing, and if you want to elaborate on that. Seeing the integrative models, though, does remind me, next week, the New England Healthcare Institute has an interesting conference coming up on interprofessional education. And I think this whole issue of training, all the team emphasis, Dr. Shalala was talking about how we're going to really expand the scope and our understanding about healthcare in order to make sense of sort of where nursings fit into it. Dr. Shalala, could you talk a little bit about sort of at least the nascent movement to really try and make real this kind of cross-pollination across silos in the professions so that nurses, doctors, pharmacists, et cetera, are training together more?
Well, certainly in large universities where they have all those schools, there's a lot more of that going on. I think the leadership, the educational leadership, is beginning to get it. My dean of nursing and the dean of the medical school are working very close together and trying to think through how they can educate their students together, but also in the messages we send. The chief operating officer of our hospital is also the chief nursing officer. That sends a very clear message about how we want to organize healthcare in the hospital setting. And to the extent that we put nursing leaders in critical places and make it very clear to doctors and to pharmacists that they're part of an overall healthcare team and are educated together so that when they do get to different settings, their attitude is not forgive me, that these are handmaidens, but rather than that they are partners.
Dr. Shalala Sal Esparza, I should say, says, your wider perspective on the issue of quality and care access is compelling. I have not heard anyone mention how our physician colleagues are reacting to this new possible role for nursing in this larger perspective. Do you and or Sue want to respond to that?
Well, ways, right, Sue?
We're going to be trying, as I said before, we feel it's important to engage our physician colleagues just as well as the other colleagues. We do know that there is a website that many physicians are part of. It's called CIRMO. It's supposed to be the largest physician chat room and website in the country. And we do know that there's chatter, if you will, on that website about the roles of nurses and nurse practitioners. And I think they're very engaged around those topics, and they have definite opinions.
Well, there's no question about that. But, you know, one of the things I'm an educator, so, you know, I run universities for a living. So I worry about the next generation, that we, and I want to make sure that we send a very clear message to our medical students and our nursing students that they're going to be part of a team. And if they want to be autonomous and think they're going to be at the top of the heap, this is not the world they're going into. The future of healthcare is a team approach in which everyone has an equal voice and an equal opportunity to continuously improve the quality of care.
All right, well said. And I think that just keeping on this education theme for just another second, Pat, you know, we've been surrounded by a group of really interesting students all month long working on a surgical safe surgery project. It's part of our Open School initiative.
Yes, just to let folks know that IHI's Open School embraces this idea of having professionals that are in preparation to be learning together, and one of the common platforms that's pretty exciting is quality improvement. So a nurse, a doctor, a pharmacist, or someone that's in hospital administration going for their master's, all, you know, can learn together about doing quality improvement projects. So I think that as you learn together, you know, I think that that enhances the collaboration when people get into the field. So I would encourage folks to look at the IHI Open School for some modules that could be platforms for interdisciplinary collaboration and teamwork.
Okay, thanks, Pat.
You know, I want to echo
Sue
on to something that Donna said, too.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of faculty members, both in nursing and medicine and pharmacy, who would like to get together. Sometimes the system doesn't allow that. But to echo what Donna said, it really takes leadership. It's going to take the leadership of major universities, academic health centers, deans of schools of medicine and nursing to really get it and really believe that if we don't practice in a team, that errors will occur. And it's got to be patient focused. If people can just focus on the devastating things that can occur because people don't work together, then I hope it really will happen.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. Just a second here, we're going to throw up some interesting. We're trying new things on each WIHI. Jane Rossner, who's part of the team, is helping us out, and she's going to throw up, we're going to put in some slides around some sort of key ideas in learning that we got out of today that you can also download. While we do that, I just want to remind people that we have a couple of opportunities to get more information and deeply involved in some of the issues we've been discussing today. There is a collaborative improvement project focused on transforming care at the bedside, and that's helping teams implement many of the TCAB ideas you heard about. This project is off the ground this fall and is still open to enrollment. The second is IHI's new membership program. That's called Passport. This program helps organizations make the most of the improvement map. That's a new online resource of key process improvements for exceptional hospital care. And there really is a target here for nurses who are so busy and so so central, as we've been discussing, to the quality improvement effort, Passport does provide some very actionable information and all kinds of tools and resources for people on the front lines of care. So you can find all of that on IHI's homepage right next to the lovely WIHI logo. And don't forget, we've had two major campaigns here at IHI, and there are tremendous resources there. So now I jumped the gun here because we wanted to get these other slides in here. We'll put up Jane's nice slides about some key learning. Many more things, and I think you'll see some of the additional learning from the chat today, and it's been a very, very vibrant discussion. Let's just kind of wrap it up with, I'll go around the horn one more time, and I'll start with Donna Shalala, Dr. Shalala. Here we had about kind of 1,400 or so on with us today, over 2,000, 2,600 said they wanted to be here today. What kinds of things would you like people to be sort of taking away with them that will kind of maybe carry them forward, make one small step, one big step in the next period of time?
Well, you just have a feeling out there that nursing is on the move, that and the tie to healthcare reform, this is an opportunity of a lifetime from my point of view. I'm a busy person, and I turned Robert Wood Johnson down once before for another panel chair. As soon as they said nursing, I said yes, because I see it as an opportunity to improve the quality of healthcare. And I just don't think nurses have gotten their due, and we need a larger voice. Not that the nursing organizations haven't tried. They've done a tremendous leadership. But you can see the change in generations as you listen both to President Clinton and President Obama speak about the role of nurses. And increasingly, the leadership of Congress. One of the things that's interesting in the United States Senate, and I want everybody to pay attention to this, is the dominant players in the United States Senate come from places like North Dakota, Nebraska, and Maine, and and Nevada, places where nurses have had a much larger role in the delivery of care.
Interesting.
They're much less uptight about the role of nursing, and we need to capture that now. I also think the new generation is different. So while I don't quite see a light at the end of the tunnel, anyone that sees that is probably going in the wrong direction, I do see opportunities, and this is one of those times in history.
Very interesting. Thank you so much. Sue, some kind of takeaway thoughts?
Well, I'm smiling. When I hear Donna talk like that, I'm smiling. I would just say that we all have a stake in this. I would bring us back to the comment I made about we all care about our children's teachers. We should all care about our nurses and our families' nurses. I would say that it is nurses' time, and they need to step up to the plate as well. They need to be responsible and accountable for ensuring the safety and quality of their patients, whether they work inside and outside of the hospital setting. And then finally, I would echo what Maureen Bisignano said, and we have a program here at the foundation called Nurse Leaders in the Boardroom. We found that only 2% of the board slots of organizations that have anything to do with healthcare or healthcare quality in this country, just 2% of those slots are taken up by nurses. So I would say that nurses need to, to your answer, what do you do next Tuesday? Think about what kind of board or committee or anything that you can be part of where you can let your expertise and voice be heard.
Okay. That sounds very apt, and I'm convinced that we'll be back with this topic in some different guises of it in 2010, and maybe we'll find out. Maybe we'll have some nurse board leaders be part of that. Pat, some sort of parting ideas.
Well, I agree with much of what Dr. Shalala and Sue has mentioned. I would just add that I think nursing is really at probably the closest interface with the patient experience on their healthcare journey, their life journey, that intersects with the healthcare at certain points in their life. And I think that nursing is poised to take on a huge leadership role in healthcare reform. I think that we need to continue to develop innovative models of care and to find innovative models of care and leverage them and have them more widely adopted. And I think we're ready to help do that.
All right. Thank you so much. I want to, this has just been a fantastic discussion, and it's still going on the chat. I want to give sincere thanks to Dr. Donna Shalala, to Sue Hassmiller, and to Pat Rutherford for all their wisdom and experience. We really benefited today. I think people should take heart in a lot of the comments today. The fact that 2,600 people wanted to be part of this discussion today, a record for WIHI, as well as attendance today, which was close to 1,500. So the notion that something's on the move here and this is an historic opportunity, I think, is reinforced by that. I want to let everyone know that you can, if you liked this program, want to listen to it again or let anybody else know, by the end of today or tomorrow morning, it's available for download on the WIHI web pages. Also find it on iTunes. Just look under the archive tab. And definitely download the chat when you log off today. And we'd love your thoughts on this program today and any ideas you have for improvement. There's a survey that you can fill out when you log off today. Any questions whatsoever, info@ihi.org. On the next WIHI, that's on November 5th, 2 to 3 p.m., same time, same station, Drs. Gordon Schiff and Pat Cross-Carey will be on board to talk about diagnosis errors. There's some fascinating new research and innovation going on in there, and Dr. Schiff and Pat Cross-Carey are really at the center of a hub of people. They're having a conference this week. They're going to be with us to talk about what is new in this field and sort of how we are going to begin to really seriously reduce diagnosis errors. I think that's relevant in a million different ways, and we hope you'll join us. Again, the people who help make WIHI possible: Jonathan Small, Mike Sweeney, Jesse McCall, Alan Olison, Jane Rossner, and Vicki Minden. You heard some music as you were getting onto the program today. That was some original arrangements by Patricio and Jennifer Batallas, and the music that opens our show and closes it, original arrangements by Aaron Flanders on guitar and Miguel Sapasoa on piano. Hope you enjoyed the photos of the head of the Charles as well. It's my privilege to host a program that's about spirited learning and improving patient care, most of all for the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. I'm Madge Kaplan. Have a good day, everyone.